Friends, before I tell you about capitalism, I must tell you about two business rivals. The names were Rafferty and Murphy, and they could not get along at all, even though they were supposed to be friendly competitors. And my angel went to see them. And my angel said to Rafferty, "Rafferty, I'll give you one of anything in all the world if you'll only let Murphy have two of them. And I'm going to do this to teach you charity in business." Rafferty said, "Does that mean that if I have a fine yacht, that Murphy has two yachts?"
"Yes."
And he says, "Does that mean that if I have a fine home in Ireland, that Murphy has two homes in Ireland?" "That's right." Rafferty said, "Angel, I'll take a glass eye." When I was a boy, there was a hardware store that we used to visit from time to time. And one day, three boys of the neighborhood went into this hardware store. There were three brothers. And the first of them said to the hardware man, "I would like 10 cents worth of BB shots." So the old hardware man put his ladder up against the shelf and climbed way to the top and brought down a box and weighed out 10 cents worth of BB shots. And then put it all the way back on the top shelf. And he said to the second boy, "What do you want?" He said, I want 10 cents worth of BB shots." So the hardware man put his ladder up, climbed up again, came down, weighed out the 10 cents worth of BB shots. And he says, "Now before I come down," said to the third boy, "Do you want 10 cents worth of BB shots?" He said, "No." So the hardware man came down. "Well, what do you want?" He said, "I want 5 cents worth of BB shots." Those are the trials of a little business, and this is big business or capitalism. And the answer we're going to give to the problem is that capitalism does not exist now. But first we begin, because this is always an educational program, with basic principles. Namely, why is there such a thing as private property? Why do we want to own? Why do we want to have things? There are two basic reasons. The first reason we desire to own is because of the poverty of our being. We own a mixture of being and non-being. Existence and non-existence. We all come to an end, therefore we're not perfect existence. Only God has perfect existence. Now, because we are imperfect beings, we attempt to fill up this impoverishment of our being by having. We're very much like empty buckets. And the having is something that adds, as it were, to our being. That, incidentally, is why we're very apt to fall into the belief that simply because we have something, that therefore we are something. It also accounts for the fact that we very often consider people to be of great importance when only they're very wealthy. They just have an abundance of goods. You know, God has nothing. In that sense, God is absolute poverty. God is, in that sense, He is absolute riches. Well, that's the first reason for wanting things. And the second reason is related to freedom. There are two kinds of freedom. One is internal freedom and the other is external. The external freedom is liberty. We are free on the inside because we have a soul. Each and every one of us is a source of responsibility. I am my own. I could call myself my own. Now, is it not fitting that we should have external liberty as well. And what is the best sign of external liberty? Something on the outside over which we have control, just as we have control of ourselves on the inside. For example, the artist wants to own his canvas. The sculptor wants to own his marble. The farmer wants to own his land. Thus, property is the economic guarantee of human liberty. It's a protection for freedom of the soul. Just suppose you wanted to establish a regime, a political system in which nobody would be free. What would you do? What would you have to do? First of all, you'd have to take away any private property. Because that would give a man a certain amount of independence as regards his work. And secondly, you would have to destroy his religion so that he would no longer believe that he was free on the inside. That's communism. Communism is founded upon the denial of inner and outer freedom. The denial of God and the denial of private property. The two go together. Well, that's chapter one. Here's another notion concerning property. And an idea that is very seldom thought of. All property has two aspects or two sides. We must distinguish between the right to property and the use of property. The right to property is personal or individual. The use of property is social. Now let us explain. The right to property is personal. For example, you own your own fishing tackle. You own an automobile. Or you may even own a wine cellar. You can show title, deed, possession. Now, is your right to any property unlimited? May you use it as you please? You may have a right to a gun. May you shoot your mother-in-law? Shoot gun out of game out of season? You have an automobile? May you drive it in your neighbor's front lawn or into his front room? You have a wine cellar? May you set up a saloon next to a school and sell it to minors? You see, wealth or property is socially conditioned. It is not absolutely unlimited. Where do economic errors come from? And incidentally, in treatises on economics, this is something you hardly ever see. The only treatise in economics that I know of that really, really touches fundamentals is Bernard Dempsey's treatise on economics. And that makes a distinction of this kind. Now, economics begins to go wrong. An economist, you know, is one who reads a menu from the right to the left. They say he's a man who has a Phi Beta Kappa key on his chain but doesn't have a watch. Well, economists begin to go wrong when they will take one or the other of these to the exclusion of the other. What is capitalism? Capitalism is the emphasis upon the individual right without social use. Now, the capitalism of which we're speaking to the capitalism of the 18th and 19th century. Very simply, that capitalism was based upon the proposition that there could be an aggrandizement of wealth. All profits belonged to the owner. And the owner would say, I own this property. I can do with it what I please. I want no Bible. I want no church. I want no state. I want knowing no one telling me what I am to do with what I own. It is absolute and irrevocable. When, therefore, a working man came before the capitalist with a cap in his hand, and would say to the capitalist, I want to organize with other men in order that I may get an increase of wages. The capitalist would say, can't you see that if you do this, you're destroying freedom of contract? If you join with other workers, you're no longer personally free. Now as you stand before me, you're a free man. The fallacy of that kind of capitalism was, this poor worker was not free to bargain with a man who had all the wealth, and the worker had nothing. That's why the worker had to balance his absence of wealth by an balance of power, namely by organization. Then the capitalist would also tell the worker in those days, why, I knew someone who started driving spikes in the railroad. Now he's president of the railroad. You just work hard. Someday, maybe, you will be the head of this corporation. Well, it's all very nice indeed to for the 1,000th donkey to be given a carrot, but not after 999 die of starvation. Well, that was the old capitalist. Now, wasn't it not natural that there should be a reaction against it? And the reaction came. And what was the reaction? The reaction was, you must emphasize the social use and destroy the personal right. Just as erroneous as this. And who started this system? Communism. The idea of Karl Marx. And Karl Marx attacked the capitalistic system, and he argued this particular way. One, he said, the workers are going to become poorer and poorer under the capitalistic regime. They are eventually going to reach a point where all wealth will be concentrated into the hands of the few. They will become so impoverished that they will eventually revolt. And when they revolt, they will seize the industry, confiscate it, take it over, and operate it themselves. The second principle of Marx was, not only would the worker become poorer and poorer under a capitalistic regime, but when the revolution came, it would come in a capitalistic country where the tension between what he called the exploiter and the exploited, or capital labor, was most intense. The second point was that the capitalists will increasingly make war. Why? In order that they may have colonies in which to sell their markets. They can produce more and more. And the only way they can find new revenue for themselves will be by constantly making war, taking unto themselves new lands, new territories, which they will flood with their produce. Marx's third argument was, in this reaction to communism, there will be a complete elimination of the state. And the reason is, Marx says that under capitalism, the state exists only to protect the exploiting system. In other words, says Marx, when communism comes, the state will eventually wither away. Said it will be put in a museum, just like the spinning wheel. The state is concerned only with defending private property. And that all of its representatives, said Marx, belong to the exploiting class. When communism comes, there'll be no need, said Marx, of any state. There will not be any stealing, because everybody owns the property. That reminds me that at a writer's conference some years ago, André Malraux, the French writer, was discussing with a group of communist writers whether or not the workers did not sometimes think of their souls. And he said to one of the communist writers, what would happen if one of your proletariats was hit by a streetcar in danger of death? What would he think about? The communist was silent for a moment, and then he said, well, under the socialistic system, there are no accidents. Well, that was the analysis of Marx. Now, what actually happened? None of these things happened. First of all, workers, did they get poorer and poorer? As a matter of fact, in the United States, they got richer and richer. My salary for 25 years as a university professor was one-third of a truck driver's. Incidentally, there was a divorce in Chicago not very long ago. One woman got a divorce from her husband because he had told her always that he was a truck driver earning $40 a day. And she found out that he was only a banker. The increase of salary has been 3% a year in wages for 10 years. The average, furthermore, the working man is not interested in taking over industry. The American working man doesn't want the responsibility and the headache of the industry. So that there is today a tremendous amount of prosperity among the workers. They have organized. Now they're getting a share of the wealth. Furthermore, Marx was wrong in saying that this revolution would take place in the country where there was the greatest tension between capital and labor. But it didn't take place in the sick country where there was the greatest tension between capital and labor. It took place in Russia where there was no tension. Therefore, it was not an economic law of history. It was merely Asiatic violence that made the revolution. Marx was wrong about the workers. He's also wrong about the colonies. America was in two world wars, and America did not add 1 foot of ground to our national possessions as a result of two victorious world wars. And the communistic country now owns 1/3 of the earth's surface. Furthermore, government did not side with the capitalistic class. Theodore Roosevelt went after the railroads. Wilson went after the bankers. We had the Wagner Act, the Security Act, collective bargaining, all kinds of social security. And the governments have been working for the common good and not just for any one class alone. The communist system has completely failed. In its interpretation of facts, in his judgment certainly of America. What has happened then? If we could ever draw out a picture of what is happening, capital, instead of being concentrated in the hands of the few, is today being diffused. Instead of a few, they used to speak, for example, of 500 families as possessing all the wealth. This is what is happening today to the wealth of the United States. It's being distributed down. Down to people. There are, for example, in the United States, 12,500,000 stockholders. That's where the wealth is going. Capitalism does not exist. If it existed, as Burroughs said, not Milton. If you're an economist, you know the real Burroughs. Who am I talking? 12,500,000. Furthermore, 70% of the national income of the United States goes in wages. It's right in describing it as people's capitalism. Well, the only place that capitalism exists today is in the minds of the Marxists. We even couldn't use the expression. Unless we use it as Burroughs said, to describe it as people's capitalism, for that's what it is. Now, there's a final point I'd like to bring out. My angel is really, he belongs to labor tonight, sometimes to capital. A final point about it. You know, property used to be considered, the old Latin word for it was res. Property is a thing, something you can put your teeth into, something you can walk on, something you can touch. Today, property is no longer that, or it is ceasing to be that. Property day is a token. And a token is what? A token is an artifice which is a symbol of wealth. There can be a limit to this. There can be no limit to tokens. For example, stocks and bonds. When our Lord, for example, multiplied the loaves and the fishes and fed the hungry group in the desert, everyone had his fill when he gave them loaves and fishes. Suppose he gave them $10,000 war bonds. You think anyone had said, Sodus Domini, that's enough, O Lord, just one war bond, no more, no more, no more. And that's one of the reasons, because wealth is not real today, because it's token wealth and stocks and bonds. You've got a false infinite. You've got people making money a new kind of God. You've got a decline of ethics, anything for the fast dollar. This is not real wealth. And the pursuit of the token wealth is what's destroying American life. And America, with all of its wealth, needs to learn that it's not in the abundance of a thing, things that a man has, that his life consists. Apropos of capitalism and property, you have often heard it said, you cannot take it with you. Do not believe it. You can. You can take it with you. You cannot take with you what you still keep, but you can take with you what you give away. Because all of that is written down by the recording angel. Their works follow them. So, if you'd like to take something with you, send it to me. I'll give it to the poor of the world, and you will have it when you go before the Lord. Thank you. Bye now, and God love you.